Welcome to Sullivan & Cromwell's Critical Insights Podcast. My name is Nick Borton. I'm the managing partner of Sullivan & Cromwell's Criminal Defense and Investigations Group. Today, we're going to be talking about recent developments in criminal and government investigations into the trading markets. And to do that, I'm joined by my partner, Alex Wilshire. Alex is a litigation partner at Sullivan & Cromwell, also in the Criminal Defense and Investigations Group. And over the last 7 years, he has a lot of experience in these types of investigations, including investigations into LIBOR, ISDAVIX, FX, and U.S. Treasuries. Alex, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Nick. Happy to be here.
Once upon a time, when you talked about a criminal trading investigation, people would assume you meant insider trading. But in recent years, the DOJ has taken a greater interest in prosecuting more esoteric trading activities criminally. In the last year alone, we've seen some very high-profile criminal prosecutions and, in some cases, convictions of foreign exchange traders. So what does that signal?
In part, I think the government, the Department of Justice, and some of the other agencies are developing more expertise in these subject matters. And so whereas maybe 5 years ago, a prosecutor at the Department of Justice might have been unwilling to wade into the complicated trading areas, now that they've successfully prosecuted a few of these cases, I think that there's more willingness for the government to bring these kinds of cases.
What makes these investigations challenging? What is it about foreign exchange that makes it difficult to prosecute and difficult to defend?
Well, I think you can speak a little bit broadly beyond the FX context into really just about any kind of trading that major banks and their employees are doing. In large part, that's because, this has been an area outside of the equity space that largely had been not regulated for many years. And so when LIBOR, those investigations came around, when the FX investigations came around, I think it caught people in the industry by surprise, because while they had been self-regulating, there really had not been any strict rules for the traders to follow in terms of what was permissible and what was not. And so the kinds of cases that we're seeing now and the kinds of cases that individual traders are bringing to trial are cases that test the gray area between what's improper conduct and what's conduct that everybody in the industry believes is important for banks and traders to have in order to function in terms of risk management.
And give us an example of that.
So, the perennial debate you see in these cases is the government views some kind of trading conduct as front-running, and if you talk to somebody who's involved in the markets, they view that as typical risk management procedures that banks and traders need to do in order to hedge the risk that they encounter from trading with a variety of counterparties in the market. So maybe just to say a bit more about that, banks face the market as dealers. They face the market and they're willing either to buy or sell to whoever comes to them asking to trade. And so obviously they don't know in advance necessarily who's going to be coming to them. And so they need to be active in the market in advance in order to be getting themselves in a position where that they could trade on either side of the market. And so often what happens in some of these cases that we're seeing now is the bank or specific traders are aware that a large customer order is going to be coming to the bank. And so traders, in anticipation of that, will try to begin positioning themselves so that they're able to manage their risk and likewise that they're able to be in a position where they can pass along some of the savings from their ability to manage the risk to their counterparties.
And you mentioned that these issues are not unique to the foreign exchange trading space. What other areas have we seen the DOJ be active in along the same lines?
Well, really, any time when potentially there could be trading in advance that the government can make this allegation of front-running. So we've seen it in ISDAFIX. We're seeing it now in the U.S. Treasury's investigations where the government is investigating whether there's trading by traders in advance of various auctions for U.S. Treasury bonds. We see it now in connection with large M&A transactions and other deals where, if one of the deal participants is going to be somehow active in the market in a way that could be market moving, you could expect the government potentially to be taking a look at what the traders were doing in advance of that to see whether they were, in the government's view, front running the customer.
And what criminal theories does the Justice Department use in bringing these cases?
In the antitrust context, if the antitrust division is looking at this and they see some sort of either price fixing or collusion among a variety of dealer banks, then you'll see the traditional Sherman Act type of theories. In terms of the fraud section at the Department of Justice and the various U.S. attorney's offices, commonly you're most commonly seeing this in terms of a mail fraud or a wire fraud theory. And the idea there is that the government will point to some statement that either the institution or some individual made to the counterparty, and then the government will argue, well, that wasn't strictly true, and therefore you've committed some kind of fraud.
Now, of course, there is a federal statute that criminalizes market manipulation in the Commodity Exchange Act. Why don't we see that used very often in these cases?
The answer is partially different depending on whether you're talking about the criminal context with DOJ or with some of the other regulators like the CFTC. I think in the criminal space, while the CEA does provide DOJ with a criminal market manipulation theory, it's a tougher burden for the government to make. In large part, the test that the government needs to prove comes down to the trader's intent when they're making the trades. And in a lot of the circuits around the country, the law is that you need to be able to prove, if you're the government, that the trader's sole intent in making a trade was to try to manipulate the markets. And for the reasons we just talked about before, that's often a very difficult thing for the government to do because a variety of most times if a trader's active in the market, they're thinking about managing their own risk. And so in these cases where the government's alleging front running, 9 times out of 10, that the response from the trader will be, no, I was pre-positioning, I was managing my risk, and so my intent was not to manipulate the market.
You mentioned the CFTC. How much coordination exists typically between the Justice Department and the civil agencies that regulate this type of activity?
They've had a lot of success over the years. LIBOR was a great example of that. The FX case, another really good example. And now they've moved on most recently to the spoofing context, where back in January, the CFTC filed 8 anti-spoofing enforcement actions, and the Department of Justice brought some of its own charges, criminal charges as well in the space.
What about globally? What do we see among competition and other authorities outside the United States?
In the sort of fraud space in the UK, the FCA and the SFO continue to be active. There are a number of trials going on in the UK right now from LIBOR, where the SFO is still bringing cases against the individual traders in that space. And I think really in the competition space, the number of players globally has just exploded over the last 5 years or so. Just in FX, outside the United States and the UK, obviously you have the European Commission, but there have been settlements with the competition authorities in Brazil. The South African authorities are active, the Australians, the South Koreans, the Japanese. And so I think, you know, one thing to take away from that is that when you're thinking about conducting an investigation and following the you know, potential playbook of self-disclosure and reporting to one of your competition authorities, having so many more competition authorities at the table potentially now that you would need to inform, it at least makes the decision more complicated, and there's a number of things you need to manage in advance.
Final question before we wrap. What should companies do to try to avoid becoming the subject of an investigation in this area?
Given that DOJ seems really to be relying on a fraud-based theory to be prosecuting a lot of these trading-related cases, I think the main advice I would give is to do what you can in advance to just make sure that there is some sort of disclosure, whether it's in a trading contract, whether it's on a website someplace, that just sets forth that, you know, for example, if you are doing pre-hedging as a legitimate risk management tool, that it's set forth out there so that your counterparties will have access to it. And so there's no question with the Department of Justice down the road about well, yes, you were doing this, and yes, you say it's a legitimate trading practice, but your counterparty wasn't aware of it, and therefore there was confusion and the opportunity for some sort of misleading statement to be made to that counterparty.
Thank you, Alex, for joining us, and thank you, everyone, for listening. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at solcrom.com.